Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to your Press Gazette Future of Media Explained podcast. I'm Bron Maher, a reporter for Press Gazette, and today I'll be talking to Dom Ponsford, our editor, about the magazine ABCs for 2023. Now, the headline for the magazine ABCs for 2023, as with so many things in print media over the last few years, is a tale of secular decline. Total circulation fell 12.4% to 21 million average monthly circulation across all magazines, and that's obviously just the ones that are still reporting to the ABCs. But there is some good news. More publications grew year on year than they did in 2022. In our last ranking, only 31 magazines reported a circulation rise, whereas this year that figure was 53. That is a bit of an unusual figure this year, though. And I'll pass over to Dom, who focused on the digital magazine circulations for that. Dom, what can you tell us about that?
Well, so there is a catch, Brom. So 53 up, which sounds pretty good. But as far as I can tell, nearly all of that growth is down to digital editions, which, you know, that's good news, I guess, as well. But within those digital edition sales, all the digital editions growth is from all you can read mag aggregators, which is a fairly new thing, but it seems to be a very much a growing thing in terms of ABCs, is that if you're a magazine that's signed up to a one of these sort of Spotify style services where you pay, you know, £10 a month and you can read a whole bunch of magazines, if you log on to an individual title over that month, then that'll count towards their ABC figure. So digital edition circulation across the board was up 15% to an average of 2.6 million on average per edition. But all of that growth was down to these all-you-can-read services. So it's good, but I guess in terms of, you know, revenue, it's going to be a lot smaller than what you would get if they were signing up to read you sort of direct. Because, you know, so if you're paying £10 a month to an aggregator and you're reading a whole bunch of different magazines over the month, then each of those magazines will get a sort of small slice of that £10. So to be honest, Bron, I'm not sure what it adds up to, but, you know, it probably doesn't add up to as much as a sort of direct sale.
Right, yeah. So we don't necessarily have the way through quite yet, but it's maybe a way forward. Normally, the magazine ABC is kind of a shrink year on year. We have fewer titles each year opting to put themselves forward for it. We did have a few new entries this year. We had Asda Magazine, which is the second largest magazine in the UK now after Tesco Magazine, funnily enough. And then in terms of other new entries, we got the Jewish Chronicle as well, which is a funny one because they generally describe themselves as a newspaper. But I think one of the big bright spots that we noticed was The Economist Espresso Magazine, which is a kind of...
Not really a magazine.
No. How would you describe Espresso?
Well, they ordered it in the magazine ABCs, somewhat confusingly, but then The Economist itself calls itself a newspaper, so it's all just words at the end of the day. But
it
the,
sure is.
But the Espresso is a cut-price daily app edition of The Economist, which they launched in 2014, ticking along since then. But whoom, in 2023, it was up 74% year-on-year to 22,000 circulation. So you only get it on your mobile phone, and it's like a slimmed down budget version of the Economist, which is, £8 a month. So, you know, it's not to be sniffed at.
Mm-hmm. And we obviously, when the way that we usually digest the magazine ABC is we kind of break it down sector by sector, give different people in the team different areas to look at. And one of our sectors, the news and current affairs sector, usually the one that's right up top and doing the best, and indeed was doing the best this year, was Private Eye, but even that was down 6%, I think, circulation-wise year on year. But Espresso seemed to be one of the few that, I think it's, since it started being audited by ABC, I think it's just been on the up.
Yeah, the other one probably stands out in current affairs was Spectator, which is flat year on year at just under 100,000 sales, which is, you know, decent performance for them. So, you know, as always, the ABCs, we look out for the bright sparks, try and find something to inspire us a bit, and secrets of the success. So we're lucky enough to speak to Nada Arnott, who's the Executive Vice President of Marketing for the Economist Group. She's based in New York, which is where the Economist does most of its business. So they got around 1 million magazine subscribers, about 500,000 digital subscribers. And most of those, or the biggest chunk of those, is in America. And yeah, so she spared a bit of time to explain what they're doing right at Espresso and how things are looking for the rest of The Economist, which, although those numbers are massive, the mothership has sort of flattened out and gone down a little bit this year. So I sort of asked her a little bit about that, but if she thinks it can return to growth. So, hi, Nada Arnott. Thanks for coming on.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
The main thing I'd really like to talk to you about is, you know, we cover the magazine ABCs in depth, as you can imagine, and Economist Espresso was sort of one of the kind of bright sparks in an otherwise fairly dull set of figures. So it's interesting to see Espresso, you know, is up 74% year on year, up to 22,000. So it's impressive growth. I mean, can you first of all just tell us a little bit about what it is and how it fits into your offering?
Absolutely. So Espresso is a mobile-only product. So unlike our core product where you can consume it either via the app or online with the website, or you can subscribe to the print version. Espresso is mobile only. It is sort of the bite-sized version of The Economist. It gives you The World in Brief, which is a flagship franchise within our core app as well, which gives you the most important headlines of the day with a little bit more context behind them. We update it 3 times a day on Espresso, and so you get a nice feed of what's really important in the world that day. And then you can also get 4 short versions of articles. So it's a little bit, it's a snack size version, if you will, but it's not in any way a diluted version. It's not a substitute to the core product.
It's less expensive, I imagine, as well. It's
Yep. So it's $7.90 a month. So it's $7.90 in the US and £7 and $7.90 in the UK. If you sign up on the website, you get a month free trial. If you sign up through the App Store, you get a week free trial. So that's also a really nice entry point for a lot of new subscribers just trying to experience what this app is all about.
And in terms of that price point, how did you come at that? It's sort of not that far from maybe what you might pay for a Netflix account. Probably a bit cheaper than that, actually, isn't it? But it's a sort of couple of dollars a week. Have you found that that's a sort of good price point where people are willing to, they're not going to overly think too much about handing over that amount of money?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, it's a good enough price point that it's not a big burden for consumers, but it also helps. I mean, we are journalism and we have premium journalism. And so it helps fund what we do day in and day out. The other nice thing about Espresso is that when we built it and continued to refine it, the intention was to go after folks who might be a little bit more price sensitive, but also time poor, which is why it's so condensed. And that's what we talk about, like one shot a day. And then that's all you need. It's like a shot of espresso, meant to also target a more female audience, a younger audience, student audience. And that's kind of where it's fitting nicely in the audience spectrum. And if it fills a different need than what our core product fills.
Okay. And what can you say about those readers? Do you say they skew a lot younger than the main reader? And what sort of age would they be?
Yeah, I can't share exactly the age, but they're definitely younger. They're definitely more female. They're much more, the grazer type, the on-the-go consumer. So they might be the headline skimmer, someone who doesn't necessarily need to dive in deep and understand the full analysis. They just need enough to get them through the day to make the, you know, the decisions they need to make or just to stay informed. And so that's, it fits perfectly into that behavior.
Okay. And it's been around a few years, hasn't it, Espresso, I think?
Yeah, it's been around a few years. We just did a big marketing push late May, early June of last year, where we did a few enhancements to the app. We reconceptualized the creative. And so we really pushed out heavily with some brand marketing around June and then moved into acquisition marketing, which is where you're seeing in the ABC results, the nice uptick in subscriber growth.
Well, can you tell us a bit more about that then? What are some of the sort of tactics and strategies and sort of messaging that's been working well for you?
Yeah, and because it's a mobile, and I keep saying it, but it's really important that it is a mobile only product. So we went where you market mobile apps, right? So we use a lot of UAC, so universal app campaigns. We do Apple ads. We actually also partnered with T-Mobile for a little bit and ran a campaign through there as well as on search and social. So the usuals. We also went towards where more mobile only mobile first audiences are. And that tends to be podcast listeners, which actually dovetails nicely into our podcast product that we also recently launched. But really just leaning into the content consumption habits of this audience. We also integrated into our back to school campaign for the first time. And so we really pushed heavily. We believe students will really enjoy this product. And I think we saw a nice adoption in the fall from including Espresso into our campaign as well.
And in terms of sort of the geographical split, where do they sit?
Yeah, they pretty much mirror our core subscription. So you can imagine US, UK, and then rest of the world.
You mentioned the podcast as well. It's probably worth expanding that a little bit, if that's all right, because the podcast went behind a paywall quite recently, wasn't it? Last year, is that right?
Yep. So in September, we announced it was going behind a paywall, and we led with a pre-order offer, if you will, before we actually pulled it behind the paywall in late October. And that's been going wildly successful for us. It was really exciting. We were able to bring all of our podcasts, with the exception of The Intelligence, which is still the weekday edition, is still in front of the paywall. But we brought all the other podcasts behind the paywall, including all of our special shows, such as Boss Class, so that it's now a subscription product. It's priced at a lower price point than Espresso, actually. So that's at $4.90 a month. And again, it's going after that younger, primarily female demographic who, again, are not price sensitive, but they're also time poor. So they're on the go. They're trying to get all their news in while they're multitasking or hypertasking with life.
Hi, I'm Anoush, and I host the New Statesman podcast. Twice a week, we get under the skin of Westminster to help understand what's going on and what's going to happen next. We interview politicians, policymakers, and people on the front line to get you the full story behind the headlines. Plus, hear from our award-winning editorial team, including political editor Andrew Marr, to get to the bottom of what on earth is happening. Listen to the New Statesman podcast. You can subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
So is it too early to have any numbers yet on that, how those podcast subscriptions are going?
Yeah, too early for me to share, but they're going well. It's been a nice driver of growth for us, for sure.
Okay. So now you've got, is that four price points in total then? Now you've got the Espresso, you've got the print only, you've got the print plus digital, and you've got the podcast.
Yeah. And within the digital product, we have a monthly free trial. And then we also have the annual product. So that's sort of splits into two different price points. The monthly free trial is also intended to help get our journalism in front of new audiences by having a no-risk try before you buy experience.
Looking at the kind of the whole shebang, if you like, so the Economist print publication down 12%. I guess that's not surprising. That, I mean, that print is a declining market, but still, you know, not to be sniffed at, just under 500,000 copies a week. And then the digital just down slightly year on year, down 2% year on year to just under 1 million digital subscribers, according to the ABC. So does that, I mean, does that sense that you sort of flattened out there in terms of full price paying digital subscribers, or is something else going on? Is it a bit of a reflection of where we are in the economic cycle? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a reflection of where we're at in the economic cycle. Like, we're pretty bullish with where we're going in this next year. We just, I don't know if you happen to have seen any of our brand campaigns, but we just launched a brand campaign in London in some high traffic areas such as Waterloo and High Street Kensington and Heathrow, but also all through New York. We have taxi tops, we have Times Square ads, and we have a TV and radio. And so we think with the election year that we're now in, plus a big brand campaign, I think this is going to be a really strong growth year for us. So I, in no way do I think we flattened out. I think your note about print is somewhat actually intentional, right? Like, I think the industry is naturally moving towards digital. And I think we're continuing to favor digital acquisitions over print.
Because I think a lot of people worry that we, with the sort of younger readers, the sort of Gen Z, and then probably upwards to sort of under 30s, I think a lot of publishers worry that they're a kind of different generation, in the sense that less of them have a direct relationship with publishers now. It seems that they're more likely to be in a kind of brand soup. I think someone has described it as, of they come across news brands on TikTok and, you know, YouTube, but they're not really having that direct relationship with publishers. Do you sort of still feel confident that you can graduate them onto, you know, coming direct to The Economist and becoming a Economist subscriber?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's absolutely challenging. More and more, not just the younger generations, but even, you know, millennials and Gen Xers as well, they're finding new sources through the side door. So they're finding through social and through search and not coming in through the front door of a news brand. And also because the days of print are slowly moving away from us, that brand recognition of seeing someone carry a print magazine, that brand impression goes away as well. That said, having products like the Monthly Free Trial, podcast, and Espresso are really easy ways to get in front of audiences that, like I said before, it might be more price sensitive or might not want to part from their wallet for a higher price point just yet, right? And so having something that is an easier low barrier to entry for them that is priced below, to your earlier point, a Netflix or Hulu, something that they're familiar with in terms of a digital streaming or subscription product, it helps us continue to capture the younger audiences, to build the relationship with them, to help habituate them to our journalism, give them a sense of what the flavor of our journalism is, so that we become a go-to source for them, hopefully when they become mature working professionals.
I've always found like The Economist has been a very sort of special brand, in the sense that it's the kind of brand that you would sort of say you read to impress people or to look clever, or, you know, to feel that you're kind of plugged in with the world. It's got a bit of cachet around it, hasn't it? And I feel like the marketing has always tapped into that quite cleverly from, you know, the early days when you had the sort of billboard ads and the sort of full pages in print. How has it evolved, and what is the sort of messaging like now in terms of how you're going to keep that cachet and keep that brand presence and keep it healthy?
So we are definitely a premium source of journalism, and so that we've been unwavering. But we're actually far more of the people in our heritage, right? We're 180 years old, but when we were founded, it was really meant to be journalism for the people, not by the people, but for the people, right? So the cachet that comes along with reading The Economist is well warranted. It's not actually meant to be an elitist brand. So our new brand campaign that just launched, it actually leans much more into another challenge facing the news industry, which is fake news. And well, it's not so new, unfortunately, but fake news and disinformation, right? And how much of that is just proliferating through the sound waves everywhere. And so our brand campaign really leans into for fact's sake, right? Like, we are the source of truth in journalism. We do a ton of fact checking. We're very rigorous in intentional in what we publish and how we publish our content. And so that is much more, I think, of an inclusive brand message, which is we're all in this collective world of noise and chaos that we're trying to help you cut through and provide the clarity and the comfort that the journalism coming from The Economist is sound reasoning and really a good source of fact-based journalism.
Well, look, thanks for all that, Nada. And I've got to congratulate you. And I don't know if this was down to you, but great coup to get the editor, Zanny Minton Beddoes, on The Daily Show for, quite a good long interview there with the Economist on the screen, and really nice brand placement, I thought. But how did that come about?
That was not me. I wish I could take credit for that, but it was absolutely, it was our wonderful PR and comms team. But that was absolutely a massive win for us. I mean, to be the first interview after an 8.5 year hiatus was great. I think Zanny did a phenomenal job in actually espousing what our journalism is all about. And so it was a really great moment and dovetails really well with our overall brand campaign as well.
Well, that was interesting. Dom, what were your biggest takeaways from that conversation with Nada?
Well, often the old ways are the best. And when you look at magazines that can defy gravity a bit, or in this case, it's kind of really an app, and put on a lot of growth, it's often down to good old-fashioned marketing. Mm. So they put a bit of welly behind it. The Economists are masters of marketing. You know, you often see their ads around the place. It's it's a sort of really strong brand. As Nada said, you know, they've been giving it a big push, and you know, what they've been doing has been working. So yeah, that's one thing. And I think the other thing is there is a, you know, market for, she said the readership skews younger, not typically the sort of people who might get out a new subscription. But if you give them the right product at the right price point, they'll still pay for it. So that's quite encouraging. So £8 a month, you know, that's probably the price of a espresso coffee once a week. So, you know, it's not a huge investment. And if it's, you know, something like The Economist, which is going to, you know, maybe inform you a little bit better about the world and of business and politics, and help you to maybe come across a bit brainier in meetings at work, then it's probably, you know, pretty good investment. So, it's encouraging, and it shows that if you've got the right product, you know, the right price point, you know, there's still lots of growth to be had out there in terms of, you know, digital subscriptions. Although should note that it's mainly outside the UK. It's only got quite a small, you know, UK readership, but you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, The Economist is sort of an amazing global brand.
This has been Press Gazette's Future of Media Explained podcast, produced today by Suze Cooper and interviewing done by Dom Ponsford, our editor-in-chief. I'm Bron Maher, the reporter. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks a lot.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.